For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. It's wonderful to see old familiar faces and new faces to me. I wanted to talk today about our forms. Douglas, my co-tanto, gave a wonderful and very comprehensive talk and demonstration on our forms, the forms of our practice, maybe around January 7th or 8th. And that's a wonderful recording to go back and listen to if you want to know, you know, the moment by moment, you know, of our forms. And I'm not going to try to replicate that today. I'm just going to talk a little bit about some of our forms and maybe the spirit of our forms to give you some support in thinking about why we practice the way we do. And when I say forms, I mean all of the sort of even microscopic rituals that we engage in when we practice in the Zendo in particular, or, you know, in the temple, also maybe in your home space. And those forms have evolved over time, from, you know, back in the time of the Buddha. You know, Buddha lived, there was a group of monks and also nuns who grew up, you know, kind of formed around Buddha. And over time, it really became necessary to put some rules in place for how people can, you know, work together and live together and practice together as a community, and that, which was called the Vinaya. And there were, you know, hundreds of sort of specific things that people memorized and lived by. And our forms have evolved from that to fit our time and our place. And I'll get into that maybe a little bit more as we talk, or as I talk. But I think that I think that our forms come down to a question that everyone can ask themselves about why we have come here. You could ask yourself, you know, why did you come here? Or why did I come here? Why am I here? and I won't ask for a show of hands, but you may find answers for yourself, like to find peace, to find inner peace, to build a community, to get enlightened, to understand yourself, or to meditate. And those are wonderful answers. And you may have another answer. And that's wonderful too, because it directly pertains to you. But I think you may find that at the heart of your answer is another answer, and that answer is to wake up. We're here to wake up. That you know, when Buddha first, you know, attained awakening and went out to sort of see people, he looked different. You know, people could see that there was something different about him, and something, you know, kind of sparkling and new. And people said, you know, what are you? What should we call you? And Buddha said, well, I'm awake. And that's really what we do here, is we come here to try to wake up. And so I think that, you know, part of awakening is really at the heart of everything we do in terms of forms. I think that you will find over time and in listening to many stories that Buddhism and Zen are very, very practical. Buddha would not really answer abstract questions on things like, is there a God? Is there not a God? What happens to us after we die? Buddhism is not so concerned with abstract ideas. And so the Buddha doesn't say, you know, this happens or that happens. It's really concerned with, we're not concerned so much with hypotheticals. When we are practicing, we tend to try to, a lot of what we do here is perceiving and apprehending directly. I listened to a wonderful talk back in January from Dr. Paula Arai about ritual and forms. And she said, ritual allows us to experience on a nonverbal level. So what we're doing here is experiential. We're having an experiential experience. It's experiential learning. And our forms provide a frame in which we can see ourselves. We can see our resistance, maybe. We can see our mistakes. We can see our impatience. But we can also see our awareness. And so our forms are really, really just a frame. Many of them come, as I mentioned, from monastic settings, and they've been modified or simplified for use in our context. In a monastery, people are kind of a captive audience, and they're there, you know, all the time. They have much longer rituals. People have more opportunities to learn, very intricate and complicated forms and well-developed forms. And as a non-residential sangha in the city, we are not in that place. So, maybe during a service in a Zen monastery, they might bow 9 times, and we do 9 prostrations, so we'll do 3, multiple chants, and we may have 1. And so we modify these things so that they're accessible to people who are new. You know, we give, as Douglas did this morning, we give maybe some instruction in zazen and walking meditation and, you know, kind of how we move around the zendo. And no one's really expected to know all those things, you know, perfectly. You know, the minute that you're taught them, we learn things by repeating them. We learn things by maybe some gentle guidance or correction. We learn things by observing, and so we learn forms over a period of time. But I think it does help to have a basic understanding of what they are, because forms really do exist to help us perceive and actualize stillness while we're here. They help us act in harmony, and they help us, you know, to develop and maintain our awareness and our ability to respond to different situations, different needs. And in our practice, they also become habits. So as we bow to, you know, when we encounter others or when we walk into the zendo, we are enacting respect. And as we take care of our cushions, we enact respect for things. And as we engage in work practice, we bring our awakened mind to maybe more complicated activity. And they help us to, they become habits with which we encounter the world so that we can, better perceive what is needed in a given situation and act in a helpful and skillful way. So, I have been asked the question, are our forms just made up rituals? in a faith tradition that isn't handed down from a deity, do we just make this up? And my answer would be, maybe yes and maybe no. Some of our forms come from the Vinaya, which was, you know, the early code of conduct for monks' behavior. Some were taught directly by Buddha. Some evolved through generations of monastics. And our forms, while maybe modified to fit our context, I think you could go to just about any Soto Zen practice space and find many of the same things. It's sort of a common language that we speak. Maybe we do things a little bit differently, our forms kind of mark us, I think, a little bit as part of Buddha's family, or the family within our tradition. So they are sort of, you know, common, but whether they're made up or not, learning and practicing the forms can really show us some profound truths and show us ourselves as well. So I will talk directly about some of our forms. When you arrive today, you probably removed your shoes and watch and jewelry. Maybe you silence your phone as a way of removing distraction. You know, we try to, when we set out to practice, we try to limit things that will prove too distracting. And we speak in more muted tones so that we don't intrude on other people's, you know, meditation practice and other people's stillness. We might use what we call functional speech, where we really speak when necessary. And that is part of our practice in the Zendo. It's also part of one of our precepts, which would be, you know, not to engage in false speech, or not to slander, not to speak about things that are not necessary. All of those forms help us to quiet down. If you don't have to worry about your phone going off, you can settle in a way that, I don't know, maybe you've experienced this when you have to set an alarm to wake up early in the morning. It's for some reason just so much to fall asleep and really sleep peacefully when you know you have to get up early. And it's the same here. You know, we try to remove things that will be distracting or intruding on our stillness, because we can entrust ourselves to the Sangha, really, and trust that the Dōan is going to give us signals about what to do when. You know, the Dōan does have a clock and they're watching over things. We have, you know, the Eno, who will make sure that the room is comfortable and that we have a reasonable level of comfort as we practice. And so we let go of some of our need for individuality. Thank you, Dōan. And so we're here, and then we enter the Zendo, and all the places in our temple, we can think about the Zendo as being a place that's really dedicated to awakening, and not for anything else. Even though sometimes we do other things, like if we were a really big, large temple, we would have a separate room, actually, where we go for a talk. So I would be speaking to you in some other room than our Zendo, but that's not what we have. We have here. But so when we enter the Zendo, we enter with our left foot. And you walk in with your left foot, and you make a little bow to the space. Why our left foot? I'll tell you. Because it's just a way to remember. It's just so that your very first step into the Zendo begins with remembering something, so that it's a way to collect yourself. I'll talk about it a different way. When I practiced at Green Gulch Farm, which is a monastery up in Northern California within our tradition, we enter the Zendo with the foot that is closest to the door hinge. And you leave the Zendo on the foot that's closest to the door hinge. And our door just doesn't have a hinge. So we said, okay, it's going to be the left foot. And when we leave, it's the right foot. And the meaning behind this is really just a moment to help you just sort of settle yourself and kind of wake up as you walk in. You know, we're awake from the very first moment that we walk in. And we bow in gassho to the zendo when we walk in right at the door. And it's just a way of showing respect to the space, to awakening, to maybe the occupants in general. We then walk in shashu to our seat. We find our, you know, with shashu being this position, and we bow to our cushion. Your cushion is going to be your friend for the next, you know, 35 or 40 minutes. And it's good to greet it. And then we kneel down and we smooth out our zabaton. We brush away any dust that may be there. We flush the cushion or get a different cushion, make sure that we have what we need to be there. And this is part of taking care of our space and taking care of ourselves. There's not so much there's no need to separate, you know, between whether we take care of our space or whether we take care of ourselves. But it's all one thing. We take care of, we are part of everything, and we're just spending a moment to take care of it. And so we then, you know, we kneel down, we smooth out our cushions, stand up, bow to the cushion, turn clockwise, and we bow to the room, and then turn clockwise again and sit down. We always turn clockwise in the zendo. Why? I think there's a complicated answer to that, but the simple answer is it's just a way to do it so that you can, it gives you a little bit of structure. All of our forms give us just a little bit of structure so that we have a way of knowing, you know, okay, here's what I'm doing now, and here's what you do. And I think this, it belongs to an important part of our tradition. In the harmony of difference and sameness, we chant, don't set up standards of your own. And even Dogen said, you know, the great way is not complicated, just avoid picking or choosing. We, our forms, even as arbitrary as, you know, whether we turn clockwise or counterclockwise, it just helps us to settle. So we don't have to think about how we do one thing or doing another thing. Our forms, they really come out of our precepts, our bodhisattva precepts. Some people may be familiar with the grave precepts, like not killing, not stealing, not taking what is not speech, etc. We have some other guiding precepts, the pure precepts, which are embracing right conduct, embracing all good, embracing all and sustaining all beings. Rev Anderson writes about it in this wonderful book on the precepts being upright. He writes about, well, we say, I vow to embrace and sustain right conduct. In San Francisco Zen Center, they say, I vow to embrace and sustain forms and ceremonies. It's built right in, forms. Now, there they are. And Rep has a wonderful thing that he says about this. He says, the true or liberating nature of all things is formless and inconceivably wonderful. It cannot be grasped, but it can be realized through the forms of everyday life. By giving up our habitual personal styles of deportment and bringing our body, speech, and thought into accord with traditional forms and ceremonies, we merge in realization with Buddha. We renounce our habit body and manifest the true Dharma body. This is renouncing worldly affairs and entering the Buddha way. The Buddha way is all-pervading and free of limits, yet without some container in which to practice, it cannot be fully realized. When correctly understood and practiced appropriately, the traditional rules and procedures of Zen training provide a context within which student and teacher together can realize selflessness and practice wholeheartedly, wholesomely, and in harmony with all beings. So I like his way of saying, we're taking something that is subtle, you know, subtle and maybe internal. You know, it cannot be grasped, but it can be realized through the forms of everyday life, the true liberating nature of all things. But it means that we let go of our habitual styles of being, and we bring ourselves into harmony, harmony with others, harmony with our environment, harmony with all beings. He also points out that our pure precept of embracing and sustaining forms and ceremonies comes directly from the Dhammapada, which is the early teachings of Buddha, from verse 185, which is, refrain from all evil, practice all that is good, and purify your mind. This is the teaching of all beings. So one way to refrain from all evil is practicing forms and ceremonies. We abandon all inappropriate actions of body, speech, and mind. And our forms help us to do this by giving us a way of being that we can pay attention to. So we don't just do whatever we want or act in a haphazard manner when we have come here to wake up. We learn some basic ways of being. And we observe over time and over practicing together, we observe how others do things. And I think we've been working on developing maybe a critical mass within our Sangha of people who've been here for a while, who've agreed on, you know, kind of what the forms are, and so that we can help people who are newer. I know that when our Sangha has moved spaces a number of times. Most recently, since the pandemic, we've moved actually several times, and each time we've had to adjust to a new space. And new spaces bring on, you know, just chaos in all of our minds about what are we supposed to do? Where do we put the cushions? Where is this supposed to go? How do we do this? And we've been, I think, trying to be a little bit more dedicated around, let's get some forms in place. So we now have some, you know, forms based on these basic forms that fit this particular space, so that we can so that we can practice a little more easily. We also, this space is a wonderful space, but you can see, if you look at it closely, it looks like someone's living room, which it was someone's living room, and now it's not, you know. So it was set up to be, you know, kind of lived in like a living room, and so we've had to modify a living room to be our zendo. But that, I think that that's part of the hallmark of practice, is that we don't need to have things, you know, built specifically for us. We can bring our practice to where we are. And this should give you some, you know, comfort or inspiration that you can, as you practice, it will follow you. You know, it will follow you into the world, and you can practice with others because you've been practicing, you know, to get, you know, together in a space that's dedicated to practice. We don't really need, you know, big fancy things or special spaces to help us practice. We just, you know, we learn together in the space that we have to respect that space and to take mindful care of each other and take care of each person or object that we encounter to really bring to life the true spirit of practice. And this is something that, you know, our original teacher in the U.S., Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, talks about in a couple paragraphs that I really love so much that I'm just going to read for you. He says, if we think it is easy to practice because we have a beautiful building, that is a mistake. Actually, it may be quite difficult to practice with a strong spirit in this kind of setting, where we have a handsome Buddha and offer beautiful flowers to decorate our Buddha hall. We Zen Buddhists have a saying that with a blade of grass, we create a golden Buddha, which is 16 feet high. That is our spirit. So we need to practice respect for things. I don't mean that we should accumulate many leaves or grasses to make a big statue, but until we can see a big Buddha in a small leaf, we need to make much more effort. How much effort? I don't know. Some people may find it quite easy, but for someone like me, great effort is needed. Although seeing a large golden Buddha in a large golden Buddha is easier, when you see a large Buddha in a blade of grass, your joy will be something special. So we need to practice respect with great effort. So he's saying that this very space can be Buddha if we treat it properly. In this Zendo, everyone can come and practice our way, experienced students, and also those who don't know anything about Zen. Both will have difficulties. New students will have difficulties that they could never have imagined. Old students have a double duty to do their own practice and to encourage those who have just come. Without telling them, you should do this or you shouldn't do that, the old students should lead the new students so that they can practice our way more easily. Even though newer students don't know what Buddhism is, they will naturally have a good feeling when they come to a beautiful Buddha hall. That is the ornament of a Buddha land, but for Zen Buddhists especially, the true ornament of the Buddha hall is the people who are practicing there. Each one of us should be a beautiful flower, and each one of us should be Buddha, leading people in our practice. Whatever we do, we are considering how to do this. Since there are no special rules for how to treat things or how to be friendly with others, we keep studying what will help people practice together. If you don't forget this point, you will find out how to treat people, how to treat things, and how to treat yourself. This is what we call the Bodhisattva way. Our practice is to help people, and to help people, we find out how to practice our way on each moment. To stop our thinking and to be free from emotional activity when we sit is not just a matter of concentration. This is to rely completely on ourselves to find absolute refuge in our practice. So he's saying that we each have the responsibility to enact Buddha in our life and in our practice and in our, you know, the way that we are in the Zendo, the way that we take care of each other, the way that we take care of the room. I remember it might actually have been almost a year ago, during a practice council meeting on Zoom, I remember kind of mentioning to people something that I had noticed that I wasn't sure everyone knew. We have our altar is set up the way it is for particular reasons. And one of the incense holder that's behind the kobaku, the box there, it's a round bowl. And on one side of the bowl, there's a little dimple. And when I was learning how to take care of the altar, Taigen told me that you need to place the incenser so that the little dimple is facing you. And I was noticing that many people who were taking care of the altar didn't seem to know that. And somehow that piece hadn't gotten handed down. And so I just mentioned it. And then encouraged people to tell other people as they other people are learning how to take care of the altar. And I remember Zengyu, Paul Disco, was in our meeting, and he said, there is just nothing that could be of less significance than how you place a bowl of incense. But if you don't do it the right way, Buddha won't come. Buddha won't be here. And so I think that just was such an inspiration to me for how we are together, that we need to take close care of the things in our forms and our environment, because taking close care is how we enact Buddha. So I think that's, I'm getting close to everything I want to say about this, actually. I know I haven't told you a lot of forms, but that's okay. Because I really want to, maybe the most important thing that I can tell you is that there's an unwritten rule in all of this, and that rule is that everyone makes mistakes. You know, we don't need to practice with the forms so rigidly that we lose our sense of humor. You know, perfection in the forms is not the goal. The goal is to be awake. So when we think, I have it, you know, oh yeah, I've got it, that actually stops us from thinking and observing. We want to move in such a way that we, moment to moment, are trying to enact the form, but you can't just sort of rest on your laurels and say, okay, there, you know, got it. Because the goal really is just to be awake. So actually, people who are newer here may be practicing even better than more experienced practitioners, because they're watching, you're studying, you're trying to remember, you're taking it in, and I had a thought. Maybe it will come back. but you're, as you, you know, as we're as awake as we are watching. And so, oh, I think I'm maybe going to say it in a minute. So we also, in a few minutes, maybe after our discussion, we're going to be engaging in work practice. And before our work practice, every Sunday, we chant a little verse that one of our practice leaders, Brian Taylor, modified from the Metta Sutta. And part of it says, how could we use our work only as a means to get somewhere along the road? You know, the point of doing our work is to bring our awareness to what we're doing. It's so, you know, we have such busy lives out in the world, out in, you know, Chicago, the Chicago, greater Chicagoland area, wherever you might be, that we can forget about practice. But our work practice helps us to remember. The point of it is not to, you know, not to get it done. You know, we work for 15 minutes, and whatever we're doing, when the bell rings, we stop. You know, if the floor isn't totally vacuumed, the floor isn't totally vacuumed. You know, the point of it is to work for a little while and then stop, and eventually things will be clean, you know, will get clean and they'll get taken care of. But it's not just to get somewhere. The point of walking across the Zendo is not to get to the other side of the Zendo. The point of the walking across the Zendo is really just to be walking across the Zendo. So I think that the Zen answer to why did the chicken cross the road would be crossing. You know, it's just the activity. That's the, how many times in life have we, you know, driven somewhere with, and you're so busy thinking about what you're going to do when you get there that you don't even know how you got there once you're there. We maybe are washing the dishes, and we are thinking about, you know, something else, something that's more exciting to us than washing the dishes. But from the perspective of awakening, just washing the dishes is fine. Everything is complete in this minute. And as we go through our practice lives, you may encounter some gathas or verses that people use for some of these things. One of our Sangha members a few years back wrote up a little book of gathas for everyday activities, like, you know, brushing your teeth or waiting for the bus. And there are things that you can do to help you be mindful. I think actually there's a gatha in our restroom about using the water to wash our hands so that we can take care of the world. And all of these things, along with the forms, are designed to help us with this. So, you know, if you can just be here and be mindful and observant, oh, that's what I was going to say. You don't have to get rid of thinking. You know, even on your cushion, just the whole point of practice is that recognizing that your mind has wandered and coming back. That will that will continue, even though over time your mind might quiet down a little bit, there are times in your life where it won't be quiet at all. And you're going to be coming back again and again. You may have some inner personal turmoil at different times in your life and feel like, oh, I can't meditate. I'm too scattered. But that's okay, because the point is to just come back again and again and again. So if we can just be here and come back moment to moment and be mindful and observant and learn how we do things, you know, we are truly, as Reb said, you know, renouncing worldly affairs and entering the Buddha way. So even though I only told you about how to walk in, bow, and then take care of your cushions, the rest will come. The rest does come through practicing together. And so I hope that maybe we can have a little bit of discussion about particular forms or the spirit of practice or anything that people would like to talk about. I think we have, I forget how many minutes exactly, but someone will remind me. So thank you very much. Bogetsu.
Well, it's good to see you. To see everyone here.
It's good to be here.
It's a great topic. Kōpai Suzuki Roshi is wonderful. I was thinking a couple things. One about this space. You know, first thing we do in this space is set up the altar. We refine it over time, but it's sort of like we set up shop. And it's the beginning of creating this environment to invite the Buddha and everyone to show up. And I was thinking about the carpet, because I noticed today this carpet's well over 30 years old. And when the person who was in here vacated this space, there was so much dust and dirt. It was unbelievable. I mean, I personally vacuumed about 8 vacuum bags full of dust just from this carpet. And it's been cleaned maybe a half a dozen times since we've occupied the space. But I was noticing going, it's not getting as dirty as it used to, because what happens is the dirt sinks into the carpet and into the padding, so when you clean it, it comes back up later, what's been deposited. But there's less and less, mm-hmm. And I think as we occupy this space, we adorn it with our practice, you know, with the flowers of it. So I was thinking about that.
That's beautiful. That's I have noticed there was a spot there for a while that doesn't seem to be there anymore.
and that spot was cleaned several times, but it kept coming back up. The person who cleaned it professionally said, oh, I think that might keep coming back up because it's embedded in the pad. The other thought I had was that everything in our life has a form. Mm-hmm. That is, we have some relationship and we're striving to harmonize with, or striving is too strong a word, where the intention, at least my intention, is how do I meet that and harmonize with it? And, you know, Paul is a martial artist, so that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, kumbaya all the time. You know, we have to meet things in whatever way is appropriate. And I thought, you know, so we have this playpen that's a training ground for us here.
Yeah, thank you for the reminder. Life gives us reminders all the time if we're not practicing in harmony with it. You know, when we're out of whack, life just has a way of letting us know. You're laughing. Yeah. So do you have an example?
Oh, God, I feel like the first 25 years of my life was an example of not living in harmony and being hit with a big stick until I stopped and said, okay, something's off. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I could go on.
Even a hangover is a good reminder that we're not living in harmony with life, even though I don't mean that as a moral statement. It's just a, you know, things, we do something and it has a reaction, and we try to learn from the reactions that life gives us, and maybe, you know, the reminders that we get help us to be more skillful. So, thank you. David.
Thank you so much for that talk, Ishin. The teaching about sort of every action having a form really feels like it, you know, it's like changed my life at home. Like I do some things that we do in work period. I set a timer for housework sometimes, and it makes a huge difference. I mentioned that to my therapist, and he said, "Oh yeah, that's a great technique." I was like, "Wow, I've never seen it anywhere other than here in work period." But so there is a thing that you said in your talk that I'm still sitting with and challenged by, and that's the quote from Zengyu. I kind of get the spirit of it, but I'm challenged by that wording. If you don't, like, you know, nothing could have, actually I'm challenged by both parts of it. Nothing could have less significance than getting the dintel, even with the nose of Buddha. I'm slightly challenged by that. And I'm super challenged by the second half of the sentence, that, you know, because it sounds like back to sort of punitive religion for kids and, you know, abusive parents. And it says, if you're bad, Buddha won't come. Yes. I'm really challenged by that. I'm like, no, Buddha's here already. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I didn't take it that way.
And, I get that.
I took it as more humorous, I think. And I guess maybe I would ask, if Buddha is here, how can we, if Buddha is everywhere, how can we see Buddha? You know, because I think that's what Reb is trying to get at, that the true nature of things is ingraspable. But so we have to put things in place, maybe, so that we can see them. Does that feel...
When you said the word humor, I was like, oh yeah, right, I forgot. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, okay.
Right. I
had you at humor.
Yeah, I was like, oh, right, it was a joke. If I had been there, I would have laughed, and it would have made sense in the moment.
Oh, yeah. He was completely sincere, but he meant it not lightly.
Yeah.
Lightly.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, because well, and actually, in all honesty, I felt a little embarrassed with the first part, because I was like, oh no, here I am telling people like that they have to put this, you know, incensor in this place in such a way. But then when he said the second part, I was like, oh yeah, right. There's a reason why we do things, and it's so that we can see Buddha. Buddha is here. Buddha is in your life all the time, but very hard to see.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're not clockwise, like with the work practice, you know, with the verse, when I hand the cards out,
yeah,
I mean, I guess I've been doing it to my right, but I guess that's counterclockwise. Am I supposed to do it the other way?
I don't know if we have a form for that. I think we've been just trying to get the cards out to people in an expedient manner. Is there a form for it? See, so that's another thing that we can do, is we can consult with each other about, you know, is there a form? Should there be a form? Yes.
It's an interesting thing, because there's no official form, but each work leader sort of has a form. And also, because there is no form that's explicit, when those cards are handed out, it's often one of the most awkward times of work period, because people don't know which way to send the cards.
That's true.
You know, do I go this way or that way? Do we take two piles or one pile? You know, and so I think you can have your form. My form is I usually divide them in half and send them in both directions. Oh, but wow. Then when they come back, people weren't, you know, like some people are like, well, should I start here? Or did it start? You know, so you can see that. But just asking that is cultivating an awareness. Just that questioning is a wonderful thing. What is the form here? And how do we transmit it? And so we're finding our form with you as a work leader, and you're finding it with us. So I don't think it's written which way to send in hearts.
Because you said there was something complicated about the clockwise.
Yep.
Yeah, but I'm still not going to get into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, too, like you said, things are very pragmatic and practical. I think in many ways, when we all move in a symmetrical fashion, it makes it easier to move in a tight space also. Mm-hmm. So that we're not kind of banging into each other a lot. So I think that's kind of baked into it as well.
Yeah. And we notice that in Kingdom, for instance, because we, you know, the form is to take half steps, but some people have small feet and some people have big feet. And some people take a little more than a half or a little less or breathe it and with your breath and breathe at different rates. So we're trying to figure that out, how to walk in the world. You know, I was thinking, these may seem like super inconsequential things, but I think, what if we lived our life this way? Like, what if we took care of the world this way when we purchase something at the store or somebody is inventing, you know, an atom bomb? It might be like, or plastic. It might be like, let me just think about the form for this for a minute.
AI. Artificial intelligence. You know, all these debates about how we should use it. Should we? What is freedom? You know, if it takes away our freedom.
Could I go back to the dimple for a second?
Sure.
Because saying it's humorous, but it's also important at the same time. So when you said that statement, and I believe to what I heard, it's Zengu. I wasn't there, but what it means to me is that the practice itself of paying attention, and then your mind is focused because you're paying attention, and then the physical act of putting your hands on the incensor, the mind, the attention, the mind, and the body are working together to make sure that dimple is where it should be, makes us aware of Buddha, because Buddha was here the whole time. And I feel like Zengo was saying, like, don't get anal about all this stuff because that's not the point. But like how you said about experiencing the practice, these things help us physically and mentally bring it together to actually experience the practice. And in that sense, the Buddha is here.
Buddha's there in the moment when we're paying attention. I think you're saying, Sandra?
I have one more comment about that, because what only will come to the person who knew the rule about the dimple. The person who didn't know,
he was
there, right?
Yeah.
So you provided a service to people to say, oh, people don't know.
Yeah.
So you made an offering.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a good point, yeah. That we're not really, it's not a transgression. It's just that the people don't know. That this is the form, and so we're trying to help people know what the forms are, so that you can experience that awareness.
Still,
but there is no Buddha.
There's no Buddha.
Sorry.
So, is there no practice and no realization?
I know what you're referring to. I can't remember the answer.
That's okay.
There is no answer.
I think you're supposed to go sit for 9 years. I was just thinking something in response to what we were talking about a moment ago, too. Maybe it's not important. Yes, David.
I have another Zengyu quote.
Okay.
Once Zengyu said, it's an amazing capacity of the human mind to believe in things that don't exist. And then he paused and said, like Buddha. And everybody kind of gasped. It's a beautiful moment. It's a good thing that there's no Buddha.
Well, there is awakeness. There is awakening, though.
And, you know? Yeah.
So I think it depends on how we think about Buddha. You know, the historical Buddha did pass away almost 2,500 years ago, maybe more, but there is awakening. And if there wasn't awakening, there wouldn't have been Buddha, you know? So if there wasn't compassion, we wouldn't be able to experience it. If there wasn't, you know, all kinds of things, we wouldn't be able to experience it. I don't know. I want to make sure that I'm leaving room for anybody online that might want to join our conversation.
Good morning. I have a a different experience of the forms that has been expressed so far, although I'm sure many of you probably experience this too. But, you know, I feel like I'm not a typical Zen personality. So forms for me, it caused me anxiety. And
Nicholas, you're breaking up a little bit. We can't really hear.
All right. I don't know what.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, I started with that. I feel like I'm not a typical Zen personality. And so the forms cause me a lot of anxiety sometimes. I get into a lot of self-judgment, a lot of even recrimination. And in that sense, they're a real powerful practice opportunity to, you know, kind of meet my experience, you know, as it is, which, you know, can be, I can just feel like I can be very unforgiving with myself about perfection or making mistakes or not being awake, you know. So they, I guess they can be, you know, very purifying. Like they bring up a lot of deep issues that are within my psyche that I kind of butt up against when I, you know, with the forms just in general. So, yeah, I just felt like wanted to say that just because that is my experience with them. I'm not saying I don't, you know, that there's anything wrong with them or anything like that, but it's just, it can be a bit challenging.
I really appreciate you bringing up that perspective, Nicholas, because I know that I can be the same way, and possibly many people here can be the same way, where we can really judge ourselves for doing something wrong or feel embarrassed. I think that's what makes people not want to engage in Doan or Kokyo training, because they're afraid to be, you know, kind of the one person who's supposed to be doing something and feeling like they don't know what it is. And I think that you know that judgment is optional, but it can be so hard to shake, and I really do empathize with that. I hope that you can be kind to yourself in practicing with that feeling. I appreciate that you reminded me of what I wanted to say earlier, which is that there's nothing special about the forms, except that the specialness is in our remembering them and doing them, because that's what brings our life to life. And it sounds like your life experience in doing that can be painful at times, and I hope that you can bring some compassion to yourself in that.
Yes,
I know I struggle with that.
So
yeah. Thank
Maybe
you.
Maybe Nicholas could be Doan. We need Doan to go kiss.
But yeah, it is a thing. People can feel like, you know, oh, those people who've been there for a long time, they know everything, and they're going to know that I'm ringing the bell wrong, or, you know, we can do that to ourselves. I think I've had some hesitation to be the techno because it's so complicated now, but yeah, you know, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say to Nicholas that I have never heard that there's some typical Zen personality. I don't know what that would be. I think trying to fit oneself into the mold of Zen person is not helpful. But rubbing up against the forms and seeing oneself, you know, with all our foibles, that's an important part of the practice. And I just wanted to add in terms of forms that I think the Tantos had expressed a temporal form for the Sunday morning ending about 10 minutes ago. So, but maybe somebody else has something important to say.
Thank you, Tegan. I apologize for my transgression, but maybe we do need to wrap up and move towards announcements.